It seems to me everyone in the world knows the song. And because of it, everyone knows of Avignon situated on the banks of their own river. In the distance is Châteauneuf-du-Pape, new palace of the Pope, that enormous pile of stone which was built during the time of Philip IV of France in the 13th century. Philip and the Pope in Rome did not get along at all, to put it mildly. So Philip managed to obtain the election of a French Pope, who never went to Rome at all. He went to Avignon and lived in the new castle, the Châteauneuf-du-Pape. The wine which takes its name from this ancient edifice is a blend of many varieties of grapes, and it is this which gives them the body and outstanding flavor which makes Châteauneuf-du-Pape world famous. The nearby district of Tavel, which produces the best dry rosé wine of France for export, is world famous for that cooling, pink wine drunk so much in America during the summer months. But it can be drunk in any season, and is a fine luncheon wine. To the southwest of Paris, in the region of the great chateaus, those palaces of kings and nobility, we find the charming wines of the Loire. Vouvray, Chinon, Saumur, Anjou. It is a gentle country, and it produces gentle wines. One of the most distinctive is the dry white wine called Pouilly Fumé. This is not to be confused with Pouilly Fumé of Burgundy. Fumé, of course, means smoke. Across the river from Pouilly Fumé are the vineyards of Sancerre, the home of another delightful clean dry white wine. Sancerre is the very popular wine to be found on all the wine lists of Parisian restaurants. The center for the Loire wines is the city of Tours, in the very heart of the chateau country. These are not like the wine chateaus found in the Bordeaux region, which indeed are little more than stately country homes. These chateaus of the Loire are magnificent affairs, the homes of kings. The chateaus of Amboise, Chenonceau, and Chambord are world famous. The vineyards of Muscadet are near the city of Nantes, and they are the only classified vineyards in Brittany. Muscadet is growing more and more popular, not only in the restaurants of France, but also abroad. They are excellent with oysters and seafood. Wherever there is a celebration, you're apt to find champagne, that festive wine cherished around the world. Champagne is synonymous with gaiety. But it must be clearly understood that the word champagne rightfully belongs only to those wines which come from the area 17 miles south of the city of Reims, that old cathedral city where the kings of France were crowned. It was here that Joan of Arc led her troops against the English. And during the First World War, decisive battles were fought through the vineyards above the Marne River, which flows through the lovely countryside of the Champagne area. But it is the extraordinary wine which is produced here which has made the area world famous. Champagne is made by a fascinating process which illustrates once again the imagination and ingenuity of man. Who first discovered the process is unknown, though it has been attributed to a blind old monk named Dom Pérignon. Except for the vineyards of the Moselle and the Rheingau in Germany, the vineyards of Champagne are the farthest north. This means that the growing season is very short, and in order for the grape to increase its sugar content, harvesting takes place as late as possible in the fall. Once the date for the picking of the grapes has been set, an army of workers streams into the vineyards. Their loads are quickly rushed to the press houses where the grapes are pressed. The juice is then hurried off to the enormous vat rooms of the firms which make champagne. Fermentation now begins. Then the process known as blending takes place, and it is this blending which makes champagne produced by the firm of Tétinger different from the champagne produced by the firm of, say, Bollinger, Mumm, Moët & Chandon, Ruinart, or Krug. Each firm has its own secret formula for blending. And blending is difficult, since each firm tries to make its champagne taste the same from year to year. The new wine is grapey and sweet, and its potential qualities are hidden. One must be able to tell what the wine will taste like once it has matured, and since the sugar content in the grape varies from year to year, you must also know just how much cane sugar must be added, for it is a sugar which during the fermentation process turns to alcohol. The maker of champagne tries to have all of his wines have the same alcoholic content, usually 12% by volume. Here is Monsieur Claude Tétinger, head of the distinguished firm which bears his name, to tell us more about champagne.
Do not forget that the nature of the soil is not the only condition for making champagne. there are also a few other conditions. The climate, for instance, which is very important, and which is, of course, very different here from the climate they have in Cognac. And also, the nature of the chalk of the soil in Champagne is unique. This chalk is very spongy. The chalk absorbs the rain waters during winter time. And during summertime, even if the weather is very dry, the roots of the plant will never lack water because they will find all the waters beneath the chalky soil. At the beginning of springtime, we bottle this wine. And immediately after the bottling, the fermentation begins. There was first a fermentation in cask to transform the fresh juice into wines. And a second fermentation will take place inside the bottle to transform the still wine of Champagne into a sparkling wine. To have the sediment slipping to the cork, see the way it makes this operation. We call it the remuage, and we call the man a remueur. The bottles are checked one by one till the sediment is completely stuck on the cork.
Yes.
And afterwards, when
how long does that take?
At least 3 months.
3 months? He turns it every day for 3 months?
Absolutely, but these workers are so skilled and so fast worker that they can shake easily more than 60,000 bottles per day.
60,000?
At fantastic spins.
Yes, yes. Then after 3 months of turning the bottles every day, what happens?
The work has been completely performed. We have now to take off the sediment without losing the wine. See that big, large refrigerator. In that refrigerator, we immerge only the cork and the bottleneck of the bottles.
Is that, you mean the bottle is put inside into this refrigerator upside down to freeze the neck of the bottle?
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's right. Only the cork and the bottlenecks are immersed in the freezing mixture. After 2 or 3 minutes, a piece of ice will obstruct the bottleneck. You see, the sediment is kept prisoner between the cork and the piece of ice. The man, see that worker, we call him a dégorgeur. He wants now to take off the sediment without losing the wine.
Yes, which is the sediment which is now trapped in the ice.
Absolutely. So he will put the bottle upright again. He will extract the cork. The sediment will leave with the cork, but not the wine, which will remain inside the bottle. And very quickly, the worker will put another cork on the wine, on the bottle, to prevent the wine now to follow the sediment.
You do not add another bit of wine to take up the space that the ice had?
Yes, we have to, because we have lost some of the wine.
By March, all of the wine has been bottled, each with its special dose of cane sugar. The bottles have been sealed with a temporary cork held in place by a steel wire clamp. The bottles are stored in the deep chalk cellars hundreds of feet underground, where the temperature is low and constant. Up above the chalk cellars, spring is slowly arriving in the upper world. The sap rises in the vines. Buds begin to appear on the trees. The earth softens under the rain and warming sun, and in the dark cellars, at the same time, a second fermentation takes place within the bottle. Why this should happen at precisely this time, no one exactly knows. It is an extraordinary phenomenon. It is something to sing about. Sugar dissolved in wine is added to the now sparkling clean liquid in the bottle. The amount of sugar added depends upon the type of champagne desired: brut, extra dry, or sec. Tastes in wines obviously change. Today, the demand is for a drier champagne.
Here to tell us more about champagne is Count de Chandon-Mouet. Would you be kind enough to tell us what you think of swizzle sticks that people use so very often to chase the bubbles from champagne?
Well, I believe it is a pity because it has taken about 17 centuries to invent the way of making a good sparkling champagne, and that it is a pity that with the swizzle sticks, in a few seconds, all the bubbles have gone away.
How about the temperature at which champagne should be served? How long would you leave it in the refrigerator?
Well, probably 2 hours maximum, I suppose, before you want to drink it.
And you think that leaving it too long, let us say, for a couple of weeks in the refrigerator, just is not good for the wine?
I think it would spoil it.
I see.
And if the wine is too cold, you completely lose the flavor.
Do you believe in drinking champagne young, or rather choosing a vintage that is some 10 or 12 years old?
Well, I prefer drinking champagne which are young, because with the fact that the bottle has been opened for the disgorging, it ages rather rapidly, and I think 10 years is the maximum in the life of a good champagne. Otherwise, you are apt to find wines that get flat and the
core. Yes, but now, what would you do insofar as your very famous Dom Pérignon, which is sometimes older than that?
Our Dom Pérignon Cuvée, which is a cuvée de prestige, of course, ages rather older because it matures in the cellars before disgorging. And to have a good wine, it has to remain a long time in the cellars, and it's usually very good vintages.
It becomes that much more mellow, that much rounder.
It becomes more mellow, and yes, and better to the taste. And having only been disgorged before shipment, you don't have the danger
of
bringing it to oxidation.
A single bottle of champagne takes 4 years to prepare. It is handled by 84 different people from the cellar to the shipping crate. No wonder champagne is necessarily an expensive wine, and I believe a good champagne is worth every penny. Champagne, the drink of lovers, the drink of wine lovers across the world. We are in the ancient monastery of Kloster Eberbach, in the heart of the Rhineland, which produces some of the greatest white wines in all of the world. This section is called the Rheingau. It begins near the city of Wiesbaden and extends in a great sweep 20 miles along the Rhine to the little town of Rüdesheim. The vineyards are planted on the slopes above the Rhine and face due south, catching the rays of the sun all day long. The river itself acts like a mirror, reflecting light and heat over the vineyards. We are very far north, as far as vineyards are concerned. The Rheingau is on the same latitude as Winnipeg in Canada, and it is this fact which brings distinction to the white wines of this remarkable area of Germany. Here the white grape, the Riesling grape, matures late in the fall when the sweetness of the grape is at its highest point. As in the making of the wines of Sauternes, these white German wines, the best of them anyway, in exceptional vintages, are made from the grapes which have been attacked by what is called noble rot. These overripe grapes are picked individually from the clusters during harvest and are fermented separately. Certain German words are helpful to know in choosing one of these fine wines. Words like Spätlese, which literally means late harvest, or Auslese, which means selected and picked apart from the rest of the harvest. The rarest sweet wines are Bärenauslesen and Trockenbärenauslesen, which simply means overripe and dried overripe grapes. These last wines are of an astonishing quality and sometimes sell for $20 or $30 a bottle or even more. It is important to know how to read a label on a fine German wine. It is really quite simple. The information given is very precise. The long, difficult to pronounce names are simply the names of villages, followed by the names of the vineyards where the grapes are grown. Hattenheimer is a wine from the town of Hattenheim. Sometimes, the longer the name, the better the wine, for only the meaningful quality factors are mentioned. The wine is apt to be better when both the name of the town and the name of the vineyard is printed on the label. For instance, a Rüdesheimer Schlossberg is better than a Rüdesheimer by itself. Schlossberg on the label means that the grapes have come from the vineyard of Schlossberg or Castle Hill. The more precise the label, the better the wine usually. You may also read the vintage year telling us when the grapes were grown. Originalabfüllung means original estate bottling, and sometimes the grape variety may be added, such as Riesling. Here is the manager of State Domain, the greatest state-owned vineyard in the Rheingau. His cellars, his offices, and the vats are all housed in this immensely impressive 13th-century monastery, known as Kloster Eberbach.
Now, my title is actually Weinbau Director. That means viticultural director. We are here, the Rheingauer Hessian State Domains.
How large is the state domain?
No, it's actually the biggest of wine farm in Germany, with 160 hectares vineyards and 40 hectares other lands like forest and so forth. And if you compare this figure with the average of a German wine farm, then you can realize how big it is, because the average is only 0.7 hectares, that means 2 acres.
Would you be kind enough to give us the history of this fabulous Cistercian monastery? When was it started?
Now, it was founded by French monks in 1135, and in the Middle Age, Kloster Eberbach was the richest and biggest wine merchant in the whole Middle Europe. They owned over 200 wine estates, and their cellars went as far as Köln, where they had the biggest cellar. And 1866, it was taken over by the Prussian, and since then, it is owned by the state.
The best known of German wines has no right to be famous at all. I'm referring, of course, to Liebfraumilch. It means, literally, milk of the loving woman. Actually, it is any wine from any place in the Rhine-Hessen district, and is usually of inferior quality. But now I want you to meet the owner of one of the greatest vineyards of the Rheingau, Prince von Metternich, owner of Schloss Johannisberg.
Paul, what can you tell us about German wines?
Well, the main characteristic of German wines, I think, is that we mostly have white wines. Those are the ones that are known, not only now, but since many, many years, and to the general public and in the world. And I would say the principal regions of these white wines are the Rheingau, the Rhine-Hessen, the Palatinate, and the Moselle.
What would be the main characteristic of German wines?
Well, I think that the main characteristic of German white wines is a certain acidity. It comes especially, I would say, from the Riesling grapes, and it keeps the wine rather young, a little bit like people also remain young if they manage to remain nimble, although their age, advanced age. I think that nowadays lots of things have to be that way. Everything is getting lighter, like maybe people are getting lighter, the suits are getting lighter, the shoes are getting lighter, the motor cars are getting lighter. And I think that's one of the principal sides of these German wines, is that they are lighter, and they are lighter through this acidity that keeps them young although their old age.
How about vintages?
Well, vintages are very important, because there's a great difference between years with a lot of sun, that means very good years, and years with less sun. Because one shouldn't forget that these wines grow in a very northern part of Europe, and I think they are the wines that are growing in the northernest part of the world. Therefore, the difference between a sunny summer and a not so sunny one can be very great.
There's a great deal of interest always raised about which wine goes with which food. What do you personally believe?
Well, I personally believe that white wine can go through the whole meal perfectly well. And one can also have a white wine, fresh white wine, before meals as an aperitif.
In Germany, a great deal of people drink wine in the middle of the afternoon, or for that matter, just the way one would drink whiskey, without any food at all. Is that true?
Yes, it is. I think it is true. And I think it's quite a good idea. You have many places in Germany, in many villages, where you can go and have a drink of white wine, just the same as you go and have a beer. You don't have to eat anything. If you want to, you can have a pretzel or something. But, I mean, it isn't necessary to eat anything. You drink like anybody else, like you say, would have had a whiskey.
And now we are in Rüdesheim, in a little cobbled alley lined with Weinstubes. Wine rooms or wine parlors, where people come to drink Rhine wine and to listen to music, to dance and to sing.
Ein fröhliches Leben hat noch niemand bereut. Ein fröhliches Leben hat noch niemand bereut. Ein fröhlicher Mensch wird geliebt überall. Wohin er auch kommt, ist er gern gesehen. Für ihn singt ein Spatz wie die Nachtigall. Nie wird er das Leben verschmähen. Er gibt uns einen Rat, den er beherzigt hat. Halte das Glück fest, wenn es dir winkt.
There are many sounds connected with wine. One of these I'm sure you never expected to hear. The sound of an auctioneer calling out the bids he receives from agents here in the Rheingau to purchase the new Rhine wines.
Schönheitsspätlese 20, 60, 70 zum ersten und 26, 70 zum zweiten und 26, 70, 80, 90, 27, 10. 27,10 zum ersten, 27,10 zum zweiten und 27,10 zum dritten Karet 2000.
Once a single bottle of wine was auctioned off for $80. For all its seriousness, wine is a happy business, especially the drinking of wine.
Wer hat nicht mal am Rhein in lauer Sommernacht beim Glase Wein vom Glücke träumen zugebracht.
We cannot leave the subject of German wines without talking of a wine which comes from the most picturesque and spectacular section of Germany, the Moselle Valley. In this section, the Moselle runs through a deep gorge, and the very steep slopes which arise up from the river are covered with vineyards. They are placed so precariously that it is impossible to work them either by horse or tractor. Everything is done by human hand, and to watch the workers in the vineyard is like watching mountain climbers scaling the Mont Blanc. The slate soil gives the character to these very light wines. There are many great Moselles. Among them, Piesbotter, Wehlener, Bernkastler are excellent for their bouquet, delicacy, breed, and lightness. Wines from the Rheinhessen, the Rheingau, and that section called the Palatinate are sold in brown bottles, but those of the Moselle come in green bottles. Certainly an easy mark of identification. I advise you to take a chance when you're in a wine shop. You will discover that fine German white wines are among the best in the world.